Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to the return, and a brand new episode at that, of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. It is episode 101. It's been a couple of months. I'm sorry about that, as I always am. But, what is it? I'm forgetting something. Because it's not just the return of Tom's Prerogative, being that it's episode 101, first episode after the epic episode 100 with Michael Bailey that I did. There's something else missing. Kind of forgetting. What could it be? Let me check my phone. October 6th. 7:30. You know, that's not October 6th. October 6th. October 6th. Wait a minute, that's starting to work up now. October 6th. Why does that sound like that's... I know it's something to do with October 6th. I don't think it's the sixth part, though. It's... What is it? Trying to think, what could it possibly... I think it has more to do... What's special about October? Wait a minute. Did I just say October? Whoa, that's what I'm forgetting! Ladies and gentlemen, not only is it the return of Tom's Prerogative, but ladies and gentlemen, it's Monster Mash Month right here on the Absolution Network. So, Maestro, if you please.
What can he do?
What can he do? In the past 60 years, humans have exterminated over 150 million of their own kind. No effort has been spared to reach this astronomical figure, and the methods that they have used must demand our unstinted admiration. You know, Humes began with certain very serious disadvantages, but these they overcame with wonderful ingenuity. Not having a fang or a claw, or even a whistle worth talking about, they invented guns and tanks and bombs and aeroplanes and extermination camps and poison gas and daggers and swords and bayonets and booby traps and atomic bombs and flying missiles, submarines, warships, aircraft carriers, and motor cars. They have even perfected a process whereby they can spread a lethal disease on any part of this planet. Not to say anything about nuclear power. Oh, during their short history, you know, Humes have subjected other Humes to death by burning, hanging, decapitation, strangulation, electrocution, shooting, drowning, crushing, wrecking, disemboweling, and other methods far, far too revolting for the delicate stomachs of this August descent.
I never realized he was so talented.
We don't like to boast.
I second the proposal. A member of such a talented race can only be a credit to any monster club.
Maestro, to celebrate the installation of a new member, may we hear our song.
I was waking in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast.
My legendary Vincent Crichton never gets old. Thank you, Maestro. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Monster Mash Month once again here on Tom's Prerogative and the Absolution Network, which means all month we will be covering the horror genre, or at least things that delve into the horror genre. So everything I review this month will have at least some type of horror theme around it. Now, as you can remember of last year, I kind of delved into more of the funny and the comedy and even damn well sexual as I reviewed Mod. it was Mod, all right, but the Mad Monster Party. I delved into which stop motion. I delved into both seasons 1 and 2 of Versus Audio Vampire. I delved into Soul Eater. And I delved into what I consider 2012 Anime of the Year, High School DxD. Yeah, I said that. That probably backfired on me that I like did the whole secret title and that, but that's here nor there. It's on to this month, and we are going to get more serious this year. We're going to be covering some more serious, more mature, more bloody titles with what I have planned. With that being said, though, I am actually going to start off with something, again, more a bit lighthearted, more family-friendly. The reason for that is there's something that has come out, in fact, this past weekend, that's kind of consigns that, and that is Box Trolls by Latvia, and which again directed by Chris Beller. I believe it is. I'd have to look it up, which I probably should have looked up before, but here nor there. The point being is that produced by Travis Knight, who does this film that we're reviewing today as well. The point being this, and it's very long-winded, I'm sorry. Today's film is by the same company, and of course by the same producer. It's another stop-motion animation as horror and comedy. And actually, it's one of the first stop-motion films to use 3D color printers to create character faces, and only the second one to be shot in 3D. This movie came out in 2012. I'm, of course, talking about Paranorman. It came out August 17th, 2012. And is a horror comedy about a boy who sees dead people. Of course, we'll get to that. I find it interesting because this came out the same year as Frankenweenie, which was a full-length feature film by Tim Burton, by Disney, stop-motion as well, that was basically a full-length film of a sort of short film that Tim Burton did way back in 94 called of the same name. That came out in October. This came out in August. And it is one of the things to where, you know, stop motion filmmaking is alive and well all over the world. Yeah, I'm not going to get into a pitch fest about, you know, we have stop motion, why can't we have traditional hand drawn? Because that's not why I'm here today. I'm sure I'll get to it in another day. But, you know, we're here to review Paranorman. So, because of Box Trolls is why I picked this film for this first review. Actually, initially, I had planned on reviewing some things in September, and I had two particular titles, which are now moved back to August. August was the last time they came to you. No, in November, I will be bringing those two along with a couple of others. I at least plan on having four podcasts for that month, and four for this month, before I probably have to take another hiatus in December to focus on, finals and stuff like that, as I am a college student. But maybe with that all being said and all of it out of the way, let's get into the film proper, shall we? So, Paranorman follows a young boy by the name of Norman Badcock. He sees dead people. Now, while fortunately for this young lad, he doesn't have a pedophilic Bruce Willis to follow him around, but the town pretty much thinks he's a freak. With his only friend being a overweight boy by the name of Neil Down. One day, they come across a deranged homeless man that turns out to be his uncle, by the name of Mr. Pengast, who tells him, "The power is yours, and you're the only one who can save the town," before croaking the next night. His ghost, however, comes back to haunt Norman and tells him that his power to see dead people is the only one that makes him the only one that can save the town. That he must go pry a book from his dead body and read it at the grave of the witch, which in his town of Brith Howell, it was a famous witch trial. And seven accused somebody of being a witch, and she cursed them to forever be zombies, and the town fully engages in marketing this, by the way. But that the curse is real, and that he must read from the book to stop the witch from rising up. That's crazy. And coming back alive, and her zombie, the members of the accused who've been cursed to be zombies to therefore rise up and wreak havoc on the town. Of course, he progressively ends up doing this, and hilarity ensues as he's joined by, of course, his friend, by his local town bully, his sister, and the star high school running back of the town, which is also Neil's older brother. And they go on a journey to stop the witch from coming back, or as it turns out, to put her back in her grave. Ladies and gentlemen, with all this hilarity, let's get right into Paranorman. And welcome back, and let's get right back into it. and start off, as we always do, with music. There's actually not much to talk about music-wise. Now, the soundtrack, I hate soundtrack, but the film score was composed by John Biron. It's B-R-I-O-N, so I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that. And, you know, had an overall score, because there really isn't any, like, this is a musical, so there really isn't any songs. So just the overall score, though there's bits of other music, some of which we'll get to later. But, you know, for instance, there's a school play where they sing Donovan's Season of the Witch. There's a song from a rapper, a British rapper called Dizzy Rascal, called Fix Up, Look Sharp, when the Alvin the Bully is trying to break dance. And at the end is, which is actually the song I tried to get for that little intro, but couldn't get because they wanted me to do the album, and I don't have that much money. So we'll have to do with the main title of the film that you heard there. But at the end, you have Little Ghost by The White Stripes, which is from their 2005 album called Get Behind Me, Satan. Satan! But as far as the overall score, you know, it works. You know, you hear little pieces here and there that are sort of throwbacks to sort of classic horror themes, in particular of the horror films of the 80s and the zombie films of the 80s. The dun-dun-dun, you know, the very thud sort of broad sounds of the percussion in regards to the harmony and the melody on the song. So, yeah, pretty much everything follows the overall feel of that horror theme, but it's not, like, too horror, if that makes any sense. It's, again, it's playful, it's throwback to what those sort of classic horror themes are, but it's nothing that causes really too much tension. I mean, it does work with tension, but... but the tension is done in such a way to where it's light tension. It's not too extreme. Because, again, this is a kid's movie, if that makes any sense. Overall, I find the score to be there. It's enjoyable. And it works. But it's nothing I would sit here and tell you, oh, you gotta get this album. So, it's good. It's just not one of those albums you're gonna... or scores that you're gonna go out and search and listen to over and over again. Unless you find something that particularly interests you. There was nothing that really particularly interested me. But overall, I felt that the score worked. So with that, let's move on to animation. And with animation, we're going to start off with character designs. You know, I found the character designs all to be enjoyable. Again, this is the same studio that, you know, Travis Knight, producer, lead animator, he worked on the PJs, if you guys remember that show, among other sort of stop motion there. So you can definitely see where their animalistic, I was about to say, I'm like, that makes no sense. But their sort of animation style come from, again, same people that also did Coraline. So it's got that same type of sort of artistic style within the character design. The main character, I think, is designed well. You know, he has just that bit of sort of weird look to him, to where you understand what's afflicting him. And all the other characters are designed, I think, very well. Neil's designed well. His brother's designed well. Norman's sister, his father, mother, all of them are very designed well. They all have distinct looks. That connect with their character traits perfectly for what the story is going for. They're all different, they're all unique, and it does make me believe in sort of the story's location. That brings us to the stop-motion animation. Just very, very well done. The stop-motion is smooth but jerky, and what I mean by that is that, again, as I've said before, over and over again, the point of stop motion, its livelihood is built on the art of movement. So, again, it's about making you believe in the movement. And the jerkiness is the natural sort of offshoot, spin-off that comes from that. So, again, the movements are smooth but jerky. You know, they're smooth and they flow and they make you believe in the movements that are happening on screen. And there's just that natural little bit of jerkiness there that makes it, that actually gives its authenticity to where you know, okay, these are dolls that are being, you know, as I've talked about with stop motion before, when you look at stop motion, different, you know, techniques, or should I say styles that could be used in stop motion, you have the doll technique, you have, you know, paper technique, you have claymation technique. There's a certain amount of jerk that goes within each technique that gives its authenticity. And of course, these being models and dolls that they're moving bit by bit for this movie, there's a certain amount of jerk there that's very natural to the technique that they're using and the style that they're using, and gives it, this movie, its authenticity. So I thought the stop motion was extremely well done. All the characters, it's one of those things where they're moving very natural and you feel like the characters on screen, and at really no point are you really reminded that it's stop. I mean, you obviously know it's stop motion, but it's not something that you're consciously thinking of where you're sitting there saying, oh my god, obviously that's a doll. You know, it's, the stop motion makes you believe that these characters are there and that they're moving. Let's talk about the visual and special effects next. You know, I mean, there it goes into the action scenes and everything, and the special effects are done extremely well. The prop work looks wonderful. Again, that's the thing about the backgrounds and all these locations is, again, these are more visual effects. You know, the hill is built and you move the hill down by time. Not that there isn't anything added to afterwards. But for those who know, again, this is the same type of technique that's used for Nightmare Before Christmas, Coraline, Box Trolls is an example of this, which, again, just came out. And I do highly suggest you go see. But again, the backgrounds are actually created, and it's prop work, and it's all of that stuff. And the visual and special effects here are very much outstanding. It blends to where it almost feels like, okay, this, it's hard to believe all of this is visual and physically there, because it does feel completely animated in. And so it does blend that line, and that's just brilliant artwork. I mean, it's just visually gorgeous. So I love the visual and special effects on the film. And the backgrounds itself is gorgeous. That sort of carnival-esque take on the classic Massachusetts Puritan town that, you know, feeds off ghost stories once a year. I thought that was done extremely well. So overall, the animation, I very much enjoyed. I think animation is definitely the strongest point of this film, in which it should be. As I've said before, for stop-motion animation, unlike hand-drawn animation, you know, its strongest point is its animation. Sorry, microphone was moving. I have a different setup, folks, so I apologize for that. Because live podcasting is awesome. Or as Randy Orton would say,
live TV is awesome.
Thank you, Randy Orton. But back to the point at hand. With stop motion, the strongest point has to be the animation, at least over the story. You know, with hand, as I've said before, the strongest point of hand-drawn animation is its story, whereas for CG and stop motion, its strong point is its animation, because that's what it specializes in. With stop motion, the art of movement, with CG, the art of realism. But overall, the animation is definitely the strongest point of this film. there's really nothing animation-wise that I feel is a misstep at all. It's just it is beautiful to look at visually. So with that, we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to get into acting, and it's a story. After these messages,
we'll be right back. I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be! It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Yeah, play it. Come on. Play it loud! Play it loud!
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Illogic, foolish emotions, a constant irritant,
and tantile out freak!
Two!
Come on, the circus! Right next to the dog-faced boy.
True!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
It's a super prize package worth $9,388.
This isn't the biggest bag over the head punch in the face I ever got. God damn it!
Ow! Go away, Peyton!
And now, together by live simulation via the internet, your hosts, Scott Gardner.
He killed a police officer, for Christ's sake!
You're goddamn lucky he didn't kill all of them.
And Chris Honeywell.
Keep away! Keep away from me!
You are physically repulsive, intellectually retarded, vulgar, insensitive, selfish, stupid. You have no taste, a lousy sense of humor, and you smell.
So you're looking at me?
Yeah, because she thought you're some kind of freak. Now come on, let's go.
She likes me, eh?
No way.
Shut up, you freak!
Julius, you...
I say shut up! It's a man house! A man house!
TwoTrueFreaks.com.
Gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
The Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman and the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast,
The Schuster Herald Podcast,
It's Superman,
The Carazerald Podcast,
The Armored Hero Steel, a John Henry Allen podcast,
The World's Best Podcast,
and
Radio KAL from supermanhomepage.com.
Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider, Jeffrey
Taylor, Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Sam Rizzo,
Danny Sapp,
Matthew Epps,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Yunus, and co-host Scotty V
at supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
Hey there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back, and I hope it's been a fun 4 or 5 minutes for you as you listen to trailers of shows that hopefully you should be checking out. And I know some of you who listen do check out, because I've heard from some of you that you check out the other shows. It's been a fun 3 hours for me, as I kind of peel back the curtain between the recording of part one and part two. But, yeah, you're not here to learn about podcasting and the secrets. No, you're here for me to continue my review of Paranormal. Or I should say Paranorman. At some point I'm going to get that right. You'd think I'd have the time to get the name of the goddamn fucking movie right. But no, I just drive through that like I'm a Mack truck going through a paper-thin wall. With all that being said, let's get right in back into it, mind you, with acting. Which means it's time to go over our cast list, which means if you thought me running over the name of this movie was fun, wait till you hear me butcher all these names. So our cast list has as features Cody Smith McPhee as Norman Badcock, Jodelle Ferland as Agatha Aggie Pendergast, Tucker Albrezzi as Neil Down. Where do they find these people? Anna Kendrick as Courtney Babcock. Of course, you'll be hearing her, or seeing her, mind you, very soon, as she's playing Cinderella in Into the Woods. Casey Affleck as Mitch Down. Christopher Mitz Plaz, and you don't know how bad I want to pronounce Miltz as Miz. It hurts. I just want to say that he's awesome. But he voices Alvin. Leslie Mann plays Sandra Babcock, Norman's mother. Jeff Garland voices Perry Babcock, Norman's father. Elaine Streitz as Grandma Babcock, the first ghost you meet in the movie, mind you. Bernard Hill, as Judge Hopkins. John Goodman as Mr. Prendergast. Tempest Bledsoe as Sheriff Hooper. Hannah Noyes as Salama. Salama. I believe that's how you pronounce it. Ariel Winters as Billeth Hollow Kid, number 10. Bridget Hoffman as Crystal and Parachute Ghost. Scott Menville, who I probably should be butchering name because he damn near brought his Robin voice with him on this series, as the Deputy Wayne. David Cowgill as Geezer Ghost. Wendy Hoffman as Gucci Lady. Alex Borstein as Miss Hershiser. Jeremy Shalda as Pug. Emily Hahn as the sweet girl. Yeah, I basically copied this entire cast list off Wikipedia, could you tell? And last but not least, we have Kirk Bailey, Cam Clark, Laura Cody, Eddie Frierson, Riff Hutton, Eddie Meerman, and David Zeller as Blilith Hollow Townspeople. God damn it. Can't anybody name their children with American goddamn name? Whatever happened to Ben? And Johnson? And apple pie? Although, in hindsight, I'd probably pronounce it Alpe's pie. But that's here nor there. So, all the fooling around seriously being put to the side. You know, the acting in this film, I think, is the worst part of this film. not that it's bad, but because of all the other things. The animation is spectacular. The story is quite fun, though it has its faults, as we'll get into. The music, there's really nothing wrong with the music other than, again, it doesn't blow me away. And the same thing actually here I can say about the music. It's just music, I think, is a little bit more important than acting, I think. Again, it's something that they're good. Nobody really blows me away. Just some notes on it. As I look at the... Go back to the cast list. I thought Cody Smith McPhee actually did a very fine job in the lead role. Did a wonderful job in making me believe in this kid who has to go through all these troubles. So I thought he did a terrific job as Norman. Mr. Tucker, as I began, I'm going to attempt once again to pronounce that last name, who plays Neil, I thought was the best voice actor in the film, quite honestly. He really brought that character alive and made that character fun, as pretty much did all of the voice actors for what I call the main five characters, the group of characters, or as I call them, as I'll call them from now on, the Goonie group. Same with Christopher, I thought he did a great job as the bully and all things he did. And then some of the voices are just, Jeff Garland. If you've heard Jeff Garland, you know Jeff Garland's voice. And it's Jeff Garland doing his father voice. If you've seen, why can't I remember the game? Because the Goldmans, forgive me. If you've seen the Goldmans, you've heard his voice, and you've seen this character. It's Jeff Garland's father character. It's John Goodman doing his creepy voice. His creepy old man voice, mind you. So you've heard some of these before. I also bring up the Adrian Menville. Again, I know that you really only do one voice. But nice of you to bring the Robin voice to the show there, Scott. everybody else did a really pretty decent job with their voices. It's nothing really just stood out. Not that I'm expecting all these side characters to have, five lines in the movie to, blow me away. But it's like, they did... Every person did what they had to do, but it doesn't seem like it went beyond that. It's just there. It does its job, and it does its job well. But there doesn't seem to be anything special about it. I'm trying to figure out how to describe this. Something like the Gundam Wing dubcast. And I know I have some friends who will get into an argument with me on this. But there's something special. There's something extra to the quality of that dub cast that really did make that show special for us, in particular the time we were watching it. It's why we love Scott McNally, Kirby Morrow, and Mark Eldredge, and all of those voice actors so much. Oh, and with the other things they've done, but really, that was the first big time we really got to hear a lot of those people. Then Dragon Ball Z, because it is Ocean Group. And here, nobody really just stands out, and I think that's the thing. Nobody brings anything extra to it. So they're very good performances, but they're not great performances. So with that, let's move on to story. And I've actually been excited to talk about this. The overall plot of Norman is, Norman is can see dead people. And, everybody makes fun of him. Very obvious the theme of not being afraid of who you are, not judging people who might be different from you, which we'll get to, but we're here to talk about plot. But again, it's that thing to where, you're introduced to all these different casts of characters, you know, you come together, and it's that adventure feel as Norman, of course, is the only one who has the ability to put the ghost back in her grave. As it's basically revealed, Mr. Pendergast and people before him had been going to the grave on a certain night, that the night of this movie, to read basic, because as it gets revealed, the witch's ghost is the ghost of a child who was prosecuted as a witch who did have powers, who cursed them, blah, blah, blah. And she arises every year. And so, basically, people have to tell her a bedtime story to put her back to sleep, is the indication. By the way, spoilers. I probably should have put that before, but damn it. For those who probably listen to the show first time, if you've listened before, you know I'm going to spoil her. But yeah, first time I spoil everything. It's a review. It's on Netflix. Yeah. Oh, by the way, another spoiler, Darth Vader is Luke's dead dad. We're turning that joke into the new Baroque joke. you know the Baroque joke, right? It's the joke that goes where, you know, if somebody tells you it's broke, don't fix it. I will not let that joke die. I love that joke. I love jokes that make people groan. What do you mean you don't get it? Why, how the hell are you listening to this podcast if you have no understanding of what broke means? Broke. Baroque, as in the artistic styling from after the Renaissance. You know, from Europe. Learn some culture, man. Now, I'm kidding aside. that was a long way I went for a Baroque joke. But the overall plot is very simple. You know, Norman has to get the one who can bring it, and there's a group of people that help him along on the adventure. You know, as I sat watching the movie the other night, it was a thing to where the movie just felt familiar to me. And the thing I immediately connected it to was this has a very Goonies feel to it. It's one of those adventure movies where you have, again, you have a group of kids that get together and, you know, they go on an adventure. Though the thing here is it's more or less not depicted completely as an adventure. But at the same point in time, I just, because again, it's a horror and it's like, oh, we got to do this. And I'm trying to think of, it would probably fit more of a plot of something that happens from Are You Afraid of the Dark or something like that. But just the way they had the kids interact. And I think in particular the fact that they were basing this movie a lot off sort of the cheesy 80 horror films. And I say that because, in fact, the very first song we hear in the movie, the title of it is 80s Zombies Attack. So it's like a recreation of an 80s zombie movie music. So it's going for that 80s-like feel, at least with the horror it is. And so I would imagine other 80s movies would also be influenced here. And as for this overall plot, the way it plays out, the way it's like Norman decides to go get the book. He accidentally runs into the bully. He's also supposed to be grounded at the time. So his sister goes looking for him, goes to Neil's house, and basically brings Neil and his brother along with her to go search for him. Of course, she's into him, and she doesn't know he's gay, which, again, I know about that. We'll get to that in themes. Favorite joke in the movie. Neil puts an imaginary gun to his head and goes, she won't shut up. And, of course, they all get together, and they get to the house as zombies are coming, and or they bring them a road, and the adventure starts as this group basically bands together. And so you had this playing through the movie and the entire time. Like, this has a very Goonies feel to it, and it's actually adding to my enjoyment of the film. You know, it's not something to where I'm sitting here and saying it's a ripoff, because by no means is it a ripoff. It's far from a ripoff. But it's that same type of feel, like, if you remember watching The Goonies, which, by the way, is one of the most underrated movies of all time. It's a favorite to everyone. Everybody remembers watching it. It's just very underrated. And there's a certain feel that The Goonies have of this bond between these group of characters that helps, that makes you believe in them, makes you care for them. And it's part of the enjoyment because you're following these, you're basically following these characters as you're seeing the pivotal moment of their lives in which they grow up, where they gain a certain sense of maturity. And it's here too. You're seeing Neil and them and all of them gain a certain sense of maturity. Some a whole lot more than others. Honestly, I didn't think the sister would be the one that would gain the most, actually. But she did. So it has that very Goonies-like feel. Now, this actually leads to the one big criticism I have of the plot and the story, which is at the end of the film, when Norman goes to the witch's grave after the initial City Hall finasco that happens, he doesn't go with his group of friends. He actually ends up going with his family. It's his family and the zombie who's basically showing them where the witch's grave is. And just felt out of place. It's like, okay, you've been going with this Goonie feel this entire time. And, you know, now that it's with the family. And it felt out of place. It felt like that part of the film, it should have been the group of friends. I understand what they were going for. Like, they're trying to show his family is accepting him. But at the same point in time, I think there's a situation where less is more. And you don't need to have them be completely connected with the end of the film, particularly when they didn't really do anything. It was really that because they wanted to do the whole joke, it felt like, of, you know, they're all five of them in the car. We had a mother and father in the front, sister, brother, and a zombie in the back. And it's like the zombie talking with Norman, and he accidentally leans on the sister's side. He's like, Mom, the zombie's on my side. Of course, the father going, I swear to God, I will turn this car around. It felt like that was really the only reason that was there. The entire last 5 minutes, as far as the family being involved. Because when they get to the woods, the family really does nothing. They get cut off from Norman. It felt like there's a missed opportunity to do some more with the group as a whole of kids that had banded together. And I also say that because, again, I go to less is more. At the end of the movie, if you want to talk about, the parents accepting him and his family finally accepting him, it's a great scene, and I think it perfectly encapsulates the movie, the feel the movie was going for. It's a perfect ending for the movie where the father comes in, his son is watching, again, another monster movie in front of the TV. And, of course, you see the ghost of the grandmother here. Of course, nobody else can see it but Norman. He goes, son, is your grandmother here? Oh, first he asks, mind if I sit down and watch with you? Like, is your... He says, yes. And the grandmother here is like, yes. And it's like, is she over there? And of course, he's pointing together at the couch, like, uh-huh. As he sits down on the couch and goes, okay. So he turns to the other side. Of course, he doesn't see anything. Goes, hi, Mom. And of course, the ghost just stops what she's doing. Like, huh? I cannot believe it. And of course, it leads to both the ghost and the father, which of course only Norman can hear, saying the very exact same thing. As the entire family decides to sit in the living room and watch TV with him. As if, we've accepted who he is and his special ability. That was actually a great moment. It was a perfect ending for the film, mind you. That's why I say you really didn't need the family to be a part of, the journey to the grave and the journey to the woods, and why there feels like there's this missed opportunity to for the final thing for the group to do. And again, it goes back to that Goonies feel. If it wasn't something to where there was that Goonies feel there, I don't think that would have been a problem, at least for me. But it's like, if you're going to do that type of storyline, you need to complete it. And then bonding together one time, against the town to save the zombies so they can find the grave, that wasn't completing the story. The completion of the story was defeating the witch. So it felt like a missed opportunity there. As for the theme of the movie, which was, again, it's not being afraid of who you are. It's all the things that you'd imagine this theme is about. And they do a good job of having little story moments here and there, enhancing it. The whole thing of, we should, and again, the moral being taught to kids of accepting people for who they are and not judging them for anything that might be weird. Again, they put in a lot of little things here and there that sort of fit towards that theme. And they did a good job of building to the acceptance that Norman eventually gets. I guess my only question is, for this movie, was there's somewhat, I guess, a bit of controversy with this movie. At the end of the movie, they're at this is again before the family scene, but, they're going through everybody, the bully is, like, fanning the story, just a couple of girls he's trying to get on a date with. And then, of course, it's his sister and Neil's brother. And, mind you, they've been dropping clues that he's been gay the entire movie. But it's like, she says something about, wanting to show him something dangerous. And he goes, oh, yeah, my boyfriend would love to see that as well. I can't wait to introduce you. It's like, you've got to be kidding me, look on her face. He's gay? Now, there have been people that have an issue with that being the kids' movie. Like, how am I going to explain that to my child? Which I think is bullshit. It's like, you explain it. That's your job as a parent. I'm sorry if, because of your views, it's tough for you to do, and that you've backed yourself into a corner in explaining your child the views of the world. That's not our fault. Though, at the same time, I kind of agree with him. Here's why I agree. I do not agree on the same point that it's a children's movie, and you shouldn't have gay characters, or a character saying they're gay, or whatever. That's ridiculous. There have been tons and tons and tons of gay characters in children's. I can speak today in children's movies. That's not my problem. My problem is with the continuity standpoint and what it says about your town. Now, mind you, they've been showing that the town is a pretty messed up and god-awful town. But it brings up the question, because Mitch is supposedly like the star football player of the town's high school, where, Norman's sister, Katie, Courtney, excuse me, I don't know why I thought Katie for a moment. Courtney is also a cheerleader. So you have a town that either, one, has a problem with an 11-year-old boy who says he sees dead people, but doesn't have a problem with a gay quarterback, which, I guess you can't be perfect, but wow, I guess this town, is this town accepting or is it not? Which is very unlikely, so if that's news to her, it brings up the question, how did this town not know he was gay? Because I have a hard time believing the way he acted that people would not know he's gay. To quote Jim Carrey from Batman Forever, so many questions. There's just so many questions. And it's a perfect capillation. There's just so many questions that statement brings up about the town. Because I have a hard time believing that the town knows he's gay. But they would have to because he's so obvious about it. At the end of the day, the scene felt not thrown in to add to the plot. I mean, it does add to it, but it really doesn't. It felt like it was added in there because they had this character and he was gay and they had shown signs throughout the movie. But just in case there were any dumb people watching the movie, it was like one last scene to where, hey, by the way, this character's gay. Okay, I want to put this standpoint. I go on Wikipedia and I look at like some of the reviews people have given. And one reviewer said, well, this film's spectacular because it has a gay football player in it. It's like, no! It's not! Not because it's not, but because it doesn't add anything to the film! Who cares whether the character is gay or not? I understand how it adds to the plot, except that the plot isn't about him. The plot is about Norman. And more importantly, if it was acceptance, then that means hopefully everybody accepts him he's gay, which means they're willing to accept a gay football player in this so-called Puritan town, but not the 11-year-old who says he sees dead people. So it's a town that says it's okay to fuck another man up the ass, but heaven forbid you see a ghost. Again, there's too many questions. Just too many questions. Which is why I have a problem believing in it. Again, as I said, it just, at the end of the day, because of all of that, it just really feels like it's an add-on to make people, hey, by the way, this character's gay, for, like, all the dumbasses who didn't get the obvious signs. I mean, god damn it. He's got, I mean, what more proof do you need? He's got a smoking hot woman throwing herself all over him, and he doesn't, he barely even phases him, and barely even notices it. I'm sorry, I don't know about your gaydar, and we all have all types of radar, gaydar, blackar, judar, trust me, I speak as somebody who, myself, I fool a lot of judars. So, but I understand what it takes to set off a sort of a stereotype radar and what doesn't. My god. How? How? How does this town do this? How does nobody know he's gay? That doesn't make sense. It doesn't. And again, it's not that I don't accept that he's gay. It's not the point. It's not the acceptance part or the part that fits with the theme. Which again, to get back to that whole point, I think works very well. It's the point that continuity-wise it makes no freaking sense. Because there's too many questions, just too many questions it brings up about this town. And really makes the town seem more fucked up than it really is. Oh, I think I will end by talking about the comedy and the horror fan service of this movie, which there is a lot of, because, again, there's a lot of homage and fan service and everything. The horror phone, you know, again, Norman's phone plays the theme from Halloween, of course, and I think they did a great job of combining that to where he looks outside his window and there's Neil and he's got a hockey mask on. It's like, then he puts it like, wanna play some hockey? Tons of references to sort of 80 horrors, with the musical tones. Just the tons of horror tropes that they throw in. And even more point, making fun of it sometimes to where, you know, again, the opening scene. Which, again, that's my favorite thing. The opening scene, you're watching basically this zombie movie. And it's like a 70s exploitation zombie movie. Late 70s, early 80s, to the point to where, you know, she screams like, and then starts screaming again. And then, like, just keep rolling, and the boom mic goes into the shot, and the actress has to put it out of the way. And, of course, also the trope of, hey, the pretty female actress who's about to get eaten just stands there in the middle of the house as she gets eaten. It's like, it'll do nothing. Which, where did I see it? That's right, I saw it in the movies. I have to bring this up because it actually connects with this in a way. So I went to the movies the other night to see Guardians of the Galaxy one last time, before it exited theaters, or friends taught me and said, I will pay for your ticket. And I'm like, I'll pay for my ticket to go see Guardians of the Galaxy? All right. And of course, you know, they have commercials at the beginning of movies before the trailers now, because heaven forbid somebody not make a buck. But there was one for, and I believe it's the one where it's like for about phones. And it was this basic commercial where it's a group of kids and they're being chased by some guy with a chainsaw. And one goes, let's go in the creepy house. Let's go to the creepy cornfield. And one girl's like, why not go into the fully running car and get out of here? It's like, are you crazy? You want to get killed? I know. Let's go hide against the wall, behind the wall of chainsaw. Mind you, they're there, and the guy's behind him, and he goes like, it can't be that easy. It just can't be that easy. So, I find it funny, I watched that, and then you had this here. So, not really connected with the film, but I felt like talking about it. Because, see that track that's been torn apart? You see that train down the hill? I did that to myself. The comedy, I think, is well done. It's not laugh at loud, but it's that sort of smart, humorous comedy that's lightly done and gives you a chuckle here and there. In the different ghosts that they choose. And, of course, Neil. I'm going to sit here and say this right now. Neil is funnier than Olaf. I'm just saying. Just heaven forbid I go a day without trashing Frozen some way. Final rating, I think it's time. I think I've talked about this film enough. I'm wasting time now. Final rating. At the end of the day, this is a solid film. And I think it's worth checking out. I mean, it's on Netflix, so certainly check it out, especially if it's on Netflix. But the animation is spectacular. The story has a good moral plot to it. And, it's got a nice adventure feel to it. So there's fun. I don't know if it's one of those films you'll watch over and over again, though. That's the thing. This may be something this movie feels like one of those movies you'll pop in during a certain season, and that season being Halloween. So this is a nice kids movie that you can pop in during Halloween time, but I don't think anybody is going to be wanting to watch this movie outside of that. So at the end of the day, Paranorman gets a 3 out of 5 from me. Solid film, but music, it's just good. Acting that's just good. Spectacular animation. Very solid story. That unfortunately leaves too many questions about their star quarterback being gay. Understand this. Again, I have no problem with the characters being gay. I could have cared less. I was reading that article on Wikipedia, like, really, people beat a hiss about that? And I'm like, which made me think more about it, which led to me, like, my issue with it more is the continuity. But again, solid 3 out of 5 for Paranorman. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. I'm glad to be back. I really am. And I look forward to Monster Mash Month. I have some good ones, and they are not going to be kid-friendly. And there might be some fan service in it, but it's... No. It is nothing like what we reviewed last year. I got some good old blood and guts to show this year. And there's also another theme with this year, and that's really vampires, in a way. As you'll see when I get to each show, you just have to wait and see. But before I get to what next week's show is, let me tell you all the different ways you can contact the show right here on the Absolution Network. You can contact us by email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact us on Stitcher or on Facebook by searching out for the Absolution Network. Search for us and leave us comments there. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that, of course, includes everything here on the Absolution Network. My CM Jews Wrestling Reviews, what's to continue with Monster Math Month. Every review will be a Halloween Havoc review. WCW Halloween Havoc, and we start off with 1991, and oh my god. 1991, which was the, not Full Metal, let's call it Full Metal Mayhem, but the Chamber of Horrors match. Yeah, we're going there. But you got that, you got Shin Taker Crow is going to come out with something, I'm sure, I can't imagine he won't. You got John Ramos going to come out with stuff, I know, including at some point during the month, I'm going to come out with a podcast I did with him for a new show for the Tokyo SOS podcast, which I'll get to in a second. Along with many other stuff they can find right here on the Absolution Network. And of course, my Tom's Top 10 as well. There's also the Shaft Plus podcast that you can find with Gene and Chris. There's, like I said, the Tokyo SOS, hey, Godzilla podcast that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, it features my Tokyo SOS podcast, a Godzilla podcast. And soon, the aforementioned podcast I was just talking about with John Ramos, they did for the first episode, as a guest spot, mind you, but will be the Tokyo SOS Sentai Force podcast, which will be coming soon. I have it recorded, I just have to edit it and get it out. And then, of course, there is my comic book Crazy podcasting network, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. There you can find Hexcast, the only podcast reviewing every issue of Jim Bale and Sarah Witch and Black Rose when I can get to it. And of course, my CM Juice Comic Book Crazy, which I don't know when we're going to get back to that. I'm so full with college, probably never again. But there are a lot of wonderful comic book episodes that I've done over there, along with the Spectacular Webs podcast, which reviews almost every episode of the Spectacular Spider-Man animated series from 2007. Also, on all the sites, there's a sidebar that features all our friends that do a lot of great work. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey and the Views from the Long Box, along with Congrats to the Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Slaker's Major Spoiler Podcast, of course, Scott Gardner's Tutu Freak Podcasting Network, along with many others. Check them all out. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, the demons and the vampires and all of them are on the loose and they're on the prowl. And you know what? There's only one man. One man with a big-ass sword and two guns that can take him out. His name is Dante. So, Richie Branson, you've been put on notice. Next week, we review one of your favorite shows. As ladies and gentlemen, we review Devil May Cry. So, until next time, my Tsunami Generation, it's gonna get too dangerous. Stay golden.
Dozer. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom, signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.